Now we're going to talk tonight on the line that our brother led us in reading a while ago. We have not passed this way hitherto, or I'm going to just use the word before. We have not passed this way before. Our church is entering into some new adventures. We're crossing some new territory, and we need some assurance that God is with us. The high school has now completed its first year. We are launching into other adventures and projects for God in 1971 and 1972. And we will be crossing some ground that we have never crossed before. We'll be crossing some territory that is foreign territory. We'll be exploring new fields and new opportunities. And so we, like all of God's people that keep marching, have to prepare ourselves for the new territory. The Israelites had seen much. 40 years they had wandered in the wilderness. They had crossed the Red Sea on dry ground 40 years before. Now they come to the Jordan River. They had seen miracle after miracle. They had seen manna come from God. I mean little wafers with vitamins and food benefit enough to supply nourishment for the entire 3.5 million Jews. They had seen the pillar of fire by night and the pillar of cloud by day, leading them toward the land of promise and hovering over them as they journeyed. They had seen Moses take that rod and smite the rock in Horeb. And from that rock there came enough water to feed all these Jews for these 40 years of wilderness wanderings. They had seen God miraculously send enough quail out on the desert or the wilderness to feed all these 3.5 million people about for 30 days. These folks had seen some wonderful miracles. They had seen, and to me this is the most miraculous of all, I guess, they had seen their shoes grow with their feet. They had worn the same shoes for 40 years. And as the foot would grow, the shoe would grow. And it's always amazed me, girls, it's always amazed me that a little baby that wore size 1 got to be a grown man, had a size 12 bootee or something, but that's always sort of amused me. I don't know if the shoes changed in their appearance or not, but to say the least, their shoes had not worn out. Shoes were made of badger skins in those days, and for 40 years they had worn the shoes without the shoes wearing out. They had seen some wonderful times. They had seen some great victories. But now they come to the Jordan River. A new battle. A new adventure. Right across on the other side of that Jordan River, within seeing distance, is a walled city, the city of Jericho. And then on beyond the city of Jericho are countless other walled cities. And the Jews were apprehensive. Well, if you moved to a new country, you'd be apprehensive too. But if you had to cross the Jordan River without any boat, you'd be more apprehensive. And if you had to conquer a city that had walls so big that 6 horses could go abreast on the top of the wall, and you had to get that wall down and conquer that city, you'd be apprehensive too. But this was the case. They were apprehensive. Now, only Joshua and Caleb had seen the Red Sea. Every other person, even Moses, that had crossed the Red Sea on dry ground 40 years ago, has gone on to meet God. Only 2 people in all of the camp, of all these people, saw the parting of the Red Sea. Now, the Jordan River is a deep river, getting its waters from the snows of Mount Hermon and so forth. The Jordan River is a wicked kind of a river. It's swift and it's deep, and it's no small task to cross the Jordan River. In fact, it's no small task to baptize in the busiest part, the swiftest part of the Jordan River. We baptized in the Jordan. I baptized several folks in the Jordan 2 years ago next month, and something kept nipping my toe while I was baptized. And I will forget it because I guess it's fish kept nipping my toe ever since, and I wanted to use my toe for bait when I go fishing with my luck, but... Anyway, I uh, The Jordan River is hard to cross. Now they come to the Jordan River. And if they cross the Jordan, they still have to win the Battle of Jericho. And if they win the Battle of Jericho, there's still, others. And now, bear in mind this. It's not as easy as the Red Sea. Oh, but you say, now, wait a minute, preacher. The Jordan River is just about yay wide. Yeah, I know. Yay wide. I hadn't said that in years. That's the Texas statement. I hadn't thought about that. Yay wide. Anybody ever hear that kind of talk before? Oh, wonderful. Well, that's about yay wide. That's a northern statement that got down to Texas, and I picked it up there. But the Jordan River is just not very wide. But the Red Sea, of course, is much, much wider than the Jordan River. I say it's harder to cross the Jordan River than the Red Sea. Now, why? I'll tell you why. Because they had to cross the Red Sea, but the Egyptian armies were pursuing them from the rear. Now, nothing from the rear was pushing them across the Jordan River. Let me give you a little spiritual application here. I think it would be worth you coming for tonight if you can get this. Did you know that a Christian has to sometimes transfer from the fear motive to the love motive? Now, here are the Jews. They're leaving the land of Egypt. They come to the Red Sea. Now, they had to cross the Red Sea, or they would be killed. For behind them came the Egyptian armies. And on one side is the waters of the Red Sea. On the other side, the armies of Egypt. And here is Moses, and here are the Israelites between the armies of Egypt and the Red Sea. Now, they had some prompting from the rear to go across that Red Sea, but not the Jordan River. Did you know that they had no pursuing enemies? They could have stayed in the wilderness if they'd wanted to. They didn't have to cross the Jordan River now at all because no armies were coming from the rear to kill them. And so I say this. I say that the Christian ought to come to the place there later, sooner or later, where he does things because he loves God. People say to me, Brother House, do you think a person will go to hell for smoking? No, but did you know there are other motives for not smoking besides the fact that you won't go to hell? So, Brother House, do you think a person, God's going to punish a person and make him sick or kill him because he dances? Well, I don't know. But don't you think there's something holier than just not doing stuff because God's going to kill you if you do? Don't you think it'd be a good thing if you could grow enough someday to where you'd not do things that are wrong because you shouldn't do things that are wrong, or you ought to do things that are right because it's right to do? Don't you think the love motive ought to take the place of the fear motive? Don't misunderstand me. I think that more people get saved because of the fear motive than anything else. Knowing the terror of the Lord, we persuade men, said the Apostle Paul. For the wrath of God is revealed in heaven against all unrighteousness, said the Apostle Paul in Romans chapter 1. And certainly, the terror of God and the wrath of God and fear of the torments of hell certainly ought to motivate people to want to get saved. But did you know, then for a while you ought to serve God because of the armies in the rear. But after a while, there ought to be something from the front that beckons you to serve God. Something ought to pull you to service for God rather than pushing you to service for God. I get up here and say, God's going to judge you. God's going to punish you. God's going to take somebody from your family. God's going to put you in the hospital. God's going to cause your car to go out of control on the highway, and you're going to lie a bloody corpse on the highway. God's going to punish you. And he is. But I think that the Christian ought to get the place in his life to where sometime he grows in grace enough to where he doesn't serve God to keep from getting punished. He serves God because he loves God and wants to serve God. And so here's the Jordan River. No fear motive here. No Egyptian army is pursuing here. Here's the Jordan River, and the people don't have to go across. It's harder for them to cross. Now, we face some things that we don't have to do. We don't have to do. We don't have to start an elementary school. We don't have to move our bus garage. We don't have to become the largest Sunday school in the world. We don't have to build a college. We don't have to build a million-dollar high school. We don't have to do any of these things. But and we don't do it because of the fear motive that God will punish us if we do not do it. But rather, we realize there are Jordan rivers that must be crossed. There are Jerichos that must be conquered. There are walled cities that must be leveled. There are victories that must be won. Not because of the armies of Egypt following behind us, but because of the fact we love God and love His work and love His word. And so we are compelled. The love of God constraineth us to cross territory we've never crossed before. Now, that means that our church in the next few months and in the next year or two, our church will travel across territory we've never seen. We'll go into areas we've never entered before. We'll cross country we've never noticed before. We have not passed this way hitherto. Now, I want to give you some things, several things, about these people that will help us to, I think, travel in faith over virgin territory. In the first place, though the territory was new to the Israelites, it was not new to God. It was not new to God. Here's an interesting thing to me. Did you know God wants every generation to see the waters parted? I was thinking a while ago, and I haven't studied this, but I'm going to do it. I'm going to check in my Bible every time water got parted. Did you know, Brother Beebe, that God wants every generation to see everything that every other generation sees? I've often said this, that every generation ought to interpret the Bible for itself. Every generation has a right to see what every other generation saw. For example, when the Israelites were led from the land of Egypt, the first thing they had to do was cross the water, and Moses smote the water, and the Red Sea was parted. When the next generation came, Joshua smote the Jordan River, and the Jordan River was parted. When the times of the kings came, Elijah smote the Jordan River, and the Jordan River was parted. When Elisha came, he got the mantle of Elijah, and he smote the Jordan River, and the Jordan River was parted. Do you think maybe God wanted every generation to see the Jordan River parted? Of course he did. God doesn't want Dwight Moody to have anything we don't have. Young people, every young person, listen to me. The girl right here in the long hair, you look at me, and the boy behind the girl, move over a little bit so you can see me. Yeah, that's right. That's it. Good. And now you behave and listen. Girl, you look at me. And so, God wants every generation to see what he has to do. God wants every generation to see miracles. So he said, Moses, part the Red Sea. Now Moses is dead. Joshua, part the Jordan River. Now Joshua's dead. Elijah, part the Jordan River. Now Elijah's gone to heaven. Elisha, part the Jordan River. You see, God is trying for us to see what our fathers saw. One of the sad things in America is that we are living in a generation that has never seen real nationwide revival. Never seen real nationwide revival. In our country, for example, it was founded on the revivals of the Pilgrims. Governor Bradford and the 55 people that celebrated the first Thanksgiving knew what revival was. There came a falling away, but America saw revival again. For Jonathan Edwards came along on the scene and brought revival to America. And then there was a falling away. And then came Charles G. Finney and George Whitfield and others. And they brought America back to God, but there was a falling away. And then there came Peter Cartwright and the Methodist camp meetings. And later there was a falling away. And then there came, of course, the Fulton Street prayer meeting that swept across America. And the revival came. Then there was a falling away. Then there came a shoe salesman named Dwight Moody that brought America back to God. And then there was a falling away. Then there came the left fielder of the Chicago Nylons, who brought America back to God. And Billy Sunday's day, this nation really saw real revival. I mean, Billy Sunday, for example, had counter revivals when he went to a town. The jail was empty and the movie houses were closed and the red light districts closed up and the dance halls closed up, and real, honest to goodness revival swept this country. And yet since that day, America has seen nothing like revival. I think one of the sad things in all the Bible is it the 140, let's see, what psalm is it, 140 maybe, that says, we have heard with our ears, our fathers have told us what thou didst in times of old. We have heard with our ears, our fathers have told us. And yet the truth is, our nation, our generation, is the only generation since our forefathers settled on the eastern shores of this nation that has not seen real revival. But it's not new to God. God had done miracles before. And so the Israelites crossing the Jordan River, that was new territory. They had not passed this way before. The Israelites going to Jericho, it was new territory. They had not passed that way before, but it was not new to God. And aren't you glad that God's already been out and taken care of the future for First Baptist Church in Hammond? He who hath begun a good work will finish that good work, the Bible says. It's not new to God. Did you know that God has built schools before? Isn't that encouraging, Dr. Billings? God did not say, brother, they're going to build a school down there in Hammond. What in the world am I going to do? Now, Dr. Billings says, what in the world am I going to do? And I say, what in the world am I going to do? But the dear Lord, he's built schools before. And so God has passed this way. That's an encouraging thing. Number two, it is not new to the people of God. It is not new to the people of God. This was not the first time that water had been parted and then the body of water had been dried. 40 years before, the same thing. And don't you recall how that Joshua and Caleb had marched over with 10 other spies into the promised land back yonder 40 years ago? And they had seen it. They had seen it. And they came back and said, it's a land that flows with milk and honey. They brought back pomegranates. Did you know? They brought back grapes that were so heavy, it took two men to carry one bunch of grapes. Bill Harvey said, the Bible calls those the grapes of Eskel. And Bill Harvey says those grapes come from Eskel, Texas, because they're so big. And that one bunch had to be taken, carried on a big pole, and the bunch on the pole, and two men carrying that pole, one bunch of grapes. Now, Joshua and Caleb had seen that back yonder 40 years before. Thank God others have gone over this route. Now, we have not come this way before. Deacons, God bless these men. We sit in deacon meeting and we just wonder what to do. We ask God to help us. We sit there and none of us have got much sense. I guess I'm the only real smart one in the whole group. But none of us have a lot of sense. And we sit there and they built this building. We didn't know where to find an architect. We had no idea in the world. We didn't know where to find a builder. We had no idea in the world. We built the building over there. We didn't know what to do about it exactly. We didn't know where to find the money. And we just sort of asked God, and in faith we kept going across virgin territory. And we started a school. We didn't know where to find a building, but God did. We didn't know where to find a principal, but God did. We didn't know where to find teachers, but God did. And thank God there have others been across this path. We have not been this way before, but Spurgeon did. Spurgeon took the great Metropolitan Tabernacle in London and built a school for preachers, and a great work was done there. Moody did. Moody took the Moody in over here, right over here in Chicago. Dwight Moody, they called him Crazy Moody. He started a Sunday school class for poor kids. Just a Sunday school class for poor kids. And he'd round up a bunch of poor kids and have Sundays, and that's where the Moody Church was started. One day Moody was over in Chicago and one of the kids was absent the last Sunday. And Moody started and said, "Hey, you weren't in Sunday school." And the kid saw Moody and he ran from him. And Moody followed him and ran after him. And the kid ran in the house and Moody ran in behind him. And the kid opened the door to an apartment and Moody opened the door and followed him in. And the kid got under the bed and Moody got him by the shoe and pulled him out. And the father saw the kid, saw him pull his kid out, and he said, "What are you doing?" He said, "He wasn't in Sunday school last Sunday." And the father said, "You must be Crazy Moody. You must be Crazy Moody." And that name stuck with Moody. They called him Crazy Moody, Crazy Moody, Crazy Moody. "Won't you call that the Crazy Moody Bible Institute?" That's the real name they call Moody. Crazy Moody. No, nothing personal there now. But that's the name. Crazy Moody. And Moody started what? A Sunday school class. Then what? A church. Then what? Moody Bible Institute. God has passed this way before. God knows how to give us, look, as sure as I'm standing here, God knows how to give his people wisdom with which to cross the Jordan River. He's done it before. And he knows how to help us build a school. He's done it before. Got in rivers that seem to be uncrossable. Got in mountains you cannot tunnel through. God specializes in things that seem impossible. He knows 1,000 ways to make a way for you. Elijah did it. Elijah had a school of the prophets. Elisha did it. He had a school of the prophets. Lee Robertson did it. He built the Highland, the college in Chattanooga, Tennessee. And so others have. Now, that means it can be done, doesn't it? You know, when I was a paratrooper, I hate to even think about it. That fellow came down this morning, this skydiver, you know, and I look out of the airplane sometime when I'm flying and realize I jumped out of those crazy things, and I can't believe it. I get so scared I want to jump out and fall out, but I can't believe it. But anyhow, I was a paratrooper. And Dr. Billings, you know why I jumped? Because I'd see a fellow cross over there that had jumped 4 or 5 times already. And I'd say, "If that crazy nut can do it, I can. I'm every bit the man he is." And I'd see a little fellow, and he'd jump. And I'd say, "If he can jump, I can jump." Did you know if Moody can do it, if Moody Church can do it, we can do it. If Highland Park Church can do it, we can do it. If Spurgeon's Tabernacle can do it, we can do it. I'm simply saying that we have not passed this way before, but God has, and others have. There's a third thought I want to leave with you, and that's this. God has been faithful thus far in leading us. He who hath begun a good work. Did you know the same God that can find a loan for us in St. Louis, Missouri? Did you know the same God can find the loan for us for our school? Did you know the same God that can open that building up for sale down there in the United Church of Christ? That same God can find us a building for our college? Did you know the same God that can cause the people to sell that school building out yonder we bought for $35,000? Did you ever stop and think what we've done? We bought a public school building and are buying a Church of Christ valued at $500,000 and a synagogue, Jewish synagogue, all of them, for a total of $200. Let me do my own ad. You just sit there and say amen. You agree. And $203,000. Now, everybody has a PhD on the platform to help him add. And think about it now. All of that. Now, God has led us thus far. Listen. I preached 2 Sunday nights ago on It Took a Miracle, and it did. This church has gone from miracle to miracle to miracle. Now, if God can do it in 1960, God can do it in 1972. If God can do it in 1965, God can do it in 1975, you see. So, we have not passed. Oh, I just never have been long this way before. I know, but God has, and he's going to guide us. And others have, and God has guided them. And God has led us thus far. I'm sure those Jews, Joshua could say, "Now look, folks, I know the Jordan River's bad, but God caused you to part across the Red Sea. God gave you manna from heaven. God gave you water from a rock. God led you with a pillar of cloud by day and the pillar of fire by night. The God that did all that, He's alive. I wish folks knew that today. I wish people knew the God that caused the sun to stand still is alive tonight. Dr. Billings, this is your kind of story. A fellow said, what's your name? He said, my name is a colored fellow. Said, my name is Joshua. He said, oh, are you the Joshua that made the sun stand still? He said, no, I was the Joshua that made the moon shine. And that's your kind of joke. But did you know that the God that made the sun stand still, I didn't say He made the moon shine, the God that made the sun stand still, He's alive today. Did you know the God that caused the Red Sea to part and the Israelites to go over on dry ground is alive today? Did you know the God that let those Jews leave the land of Egypt for the Passover? That God's alive today. Did you know that Buddha's God, Sunday's God, Savonarola's God, Wesley's God, Whitfield's God, Finney's God, Edwards' God? He's alive today! And so should Joshua could say, I know we haven't passed this way before. I know it's virgin territory. But the God that parted the Red Sea can part the Jordan River. And so God has been faithful before the First Baptist Church of Hammond. I have no doubt. Somebody said, and I think they may have been kidding. They act like they were kidding. They said, Pastor, do you know what? We're averaging spending $75,000 a Sunday night. How long can that go on? As long as we can get credit. You see. Somebody said, Pastor, do you realize what we have bought? Yeah, I do. Somebody said, well, the house, you know, we have bought the building over here with its parking space for $60,000. We bought a building, and that's just a few weeks ago. And not over here, just a few weeks ago. We bought an apartment house for $50,000 and tore it down and asphalted the thing. And right down here, we bought an apartment for $50,000. And that's just recently, and tore it down. And, Pastor, do you know that we have bought a bus garage, $125,000, and a church building we're buying for $153,000, and a synagogue for $15,000, and for the house, how long? I'll tell you how long. As long as God's people keep believing God, God will part Red Seas and Jordan Rivers. That's all. That's all. Somebody can say, Moses, look at the night, that's a swift river. I know, he said, but God's been there before. Others have been there before. In fact, Joshua said, I've been there before. And then he also could say that God has been faithful. But here's a blessed thought. I like this. I like my preaching. I didn't mean to make it sound that way, but I like this thought. And that is this. Did you know they had new trials? But they no longer, somebody said, oh, but the trials are going to be so many, crossing the Jordan River and getting the walls of Jericho to fall down. Yeah, but did you know when you have new burdens, that means that you leave the old ones? Did you know if you've got frostbite, you can thank God that you're not going to burn to death? Did you know if you've got a heat stroke, you can don't worry about freezing? I mean, nobody ever died of heat stroke and frostbite at the same time. And so if you got a frostbite, just say, thank God I'm not so hot I'm going to have a heat stroke. If you're about to have a heat stroke, say, praise the Lord, not going to have a frostbite. So that means if you had a frostbite, now you got a heat stroke, don't worry about the heat stroke, thank God the frostbite's gone. Don't complain because the roses have thorns, thank God the thorns have roses. Somebody said it hurts a lot more to have your arm cut off than it feels good to have it on. Now, God, Joshua could have said, now look, folks, I know the Jordan River has a rushing current. I know it's a swirling river and a deep river. I know that. And I know that there are giants live in that land. I know it. But tell you what, you don't have to worry about the wilderness anymore. You don't have to worry about going around and around in circles and dying in the wilderness. And by the way, you have some new shoes, too, when you get to the promised land. I'm sure that carried the vote. The WMS. I'm sure when Joshua told the WMS that carried the church vote. Last night I went down to this church, the United Church of Christ, and the pastor is wanting to sell the thing to his people, and I think so. But he's having a few problems, and that's with some of the ladies. Because of some things they bought and gave it to the church. And so we spent about an hour last night trying to figure out what we could do to make the ladies happy, the United Church of Christ. And I told him, I said, now you come and help me make my ladies happy too. But the ladies were happy because, and no longer are the burdens of the wilderness. And so Joshua could say, we've not passed this way before, and it's going to be rough. But think, all these burdens of the wilderness are gone. Now let me say this. I'd 10,000 times rather suffer for going forward than suffer for going around. I'd rather bear the toils of progress. For example, if I were a lady, suppose I've been married a year, two or three, and I'd a lot rather be sick for 9 months to have a baby than to be sick for 9 months with pneumonia. I mean, after all, if you're going to be sick for 9 months, you may as well have something to show for it. You see. And ask the fists, the streeters, the babies, all of these multiple production companies. I mean, it just seems to me, look, we're going to have burdens anyway. Sometimes people say, Brother House, doesn't it bother you? The crowds are so big at First Baptist, especially when we have a spring program or fall program, that's so big, and you always say, hush, and listen to me, and sit still, and you in the blue dress, and you in the white shirt and the red tie, look at me! Don't you sometimes wish that we didn't have all of the crowds and so forth? No, that's the kind of problems I like. I can preach better when the crowd is not quite as big and folks aren't quite as noisy. But I'd rather preach a little worse and have the people. That's the kind of problems I like. Somebody came to me one time and they said, Pastor, the church is costing too much money. All you do is take offerings. That's not true. That's not true. Sometimes we ask for you to let us borrow money. But, money. The fellow who usually says that is not really in danger of getting himself to death. Who was it? I hadn't thought of this in years. Oh, Dr. J. Harold Smith of the First Baptist Church, Fort Smith, Arkansas, was there 9 years as pastor. He had a man in his church always criticizing him about preaching on money and about money, raising money, and money. And Dr. Smith went to the records. Now, I have never done this, but he went to the records and found out what that guy gave the previous year. And it was $1.35. And so he took a dollar bill and a quarter and a dime and wrapped the dime and quarter up in that dollar bill. And the fellow came out the door on Sunday morning. Dr. Smith was shaking hands with the people, you know. And when he got this fellow's hand, he reached in and took that $1.35 and put it in the palm of his hand. He said, now you don't ever have to complain anymore as long as you live. You're even now with the church. And somebody said, Pastor, it's just so expensive. Yes, I know it's expensive. Anytime something is alive, it costs money. I can tell you, and you've heard me say this before, children are expensive too. I can point to people in this room tonight that love to buy some little shoe size 2. Marcia, I bet you'd like to buy some little size 2 shoes for a little baby. There's Marcia. Dave. Gifford. Mr. Brother Lael, Mrs. Lael, I expect you'd like to be able to buy some shoes that little baby you placed in Babyland one day. Ron, where are you, Ron? Perky? Balcony? Ron, I bet you'd like to buy some size 2 shoes, a little dress size 3. I bet you'd like to buy some clothes that little Tyke used to sit in the balcony with over there, you and Sarah would. I know a lot of people that don't have to pay any money for children. They never have any dirty towels. Never have any handprints on the towels or on the walls, fingerprints on the walls. And never have any mud on the carpet. House is always clean. They have a child that's dead. And as long as the First Baptist Church of Hammond is alive, it's going to cost something. And I'm going to have to get up and say, we're moving forward. Let's cost something. We're going to have to give. We're going to have to let the church borrow $50,000. We're going to have to tithe and give God the offerings. Why? Because we're moving. That's why. And so God could say, or Joshua could say, you never will be hurt by an east wind and a west wind. If the east wind is biting, you don't have to worry about the west wind. And so keep marching forward. To me, I'd a lot rather suffer for progress than suffer in the wilderness. But there's something else. And that is, look what's on the other side. Look what's on the other side. Ladies, how many ladies are expecting babies? I mean, you know you are. All right. Several of you. Now, don't forget, I know, I don't know, but I've heard. And in spite of the fact you said yes, ma'am, to me, but I've seen you ladies. After about 3 months, you, even the girdle won't do any good. And then 2 o'clock in the morning, you want pickles.
And I mean, you want a different kind. They don't have any kind like that. You want a kind made in Hawaii or somewhere. And is that what you're going over there for? Yes, pickles. But anyway, to get some pickles from Hawaii. But did you know that the suffering and the morning sickness? We have a beagle dog at our house now that's going through this very thing. And every time I get discouraged about that beetle dog, I just think it will be worth it all when I drown those pups. I'm asking God to give us five. One, two, three, four, five. One for each one of my dear beloved friends. And, there's the, if you're big and you can't lie down, you look like Pike's Peak when you do. And you can't lie on your stomach or you'll feel like a rocking chair. And you can't lie on your side. And nobody can get along with you. And you're not yourself. But tell you what, look out yonder when you hold that little bundle of flesh in your arms and your dream is fulfilled. Folks, I know it's going to, on this journey we're taking, I know it's going to cost us. It's going to cost us cooperation. It's going to cost us confidence and faith in the pastor and the leaders. It's going to cost us money. It's going to cost us time. We've not passed this way before, but think about it. Think what we're going to have. I believe with all my heart that this area, as wicked as it's been, with all the taverns and with all the wickedness and all the nightclubs and all the saloons, I still believe that this area is going to become, in the next decade, one of, if not the best places to rear a kid anywhere in this country. Anywhere. Now think about it. Think. Back yonder we had, went out and looked at that old building, that old school building, and somebody today said, you ought to see that synagogue. I thought, boy, they ought to see that school building. Out yonder, before we started on it. And, I walked down the hall of that school. I just weep every time I walk down the hall of the school. For joy. Realizing what's there. And our dreams are fulfilled. Now, look, okay, the Jordan River is tough, and the walls of Jericho are wide, and there are many battles to fight. But think, said Joshua, it won't be long till you'll be living in a land that flows with milk and honey, with pomegranates and grapes, and it'll all be yours. And these dreams and hopes you've had for 40 years, they'll come to fruition and reality. Think about it. And so as we pass this territory we've not passed before, let us never lose sight that on the other side of the Jordan River, there is a way of life that'll change the lives of our families and our church and our children and help them immeasurably. And so on the other side, we've not passed this way, but look what's on the other side. But there's something else. And that is, look at God's leadings. God said to the Jews, he said, now, I want, as you know, the Ark of the Covenant always preceded the Jews. All the Israelites always did. This little Ark of the Covenant, not quite as big as that Lord's Supper table there, with the Aaron's rod that budded on the inside, and the golden pot of manna on the inside, and Moses' tablets of stone gotten on Mount Sinai on the inside. Though that little Ark of the Covenant, carried by the Kohathite family, one of the members of the tribe of Levi, the Kohathites would carry this Ark of the Covenant on staves or on sticks, much like you'd carry a stretcher or like this, and they'd carry it, and always the Ark of the Covenant was out in front, and hovering over that Ark of the Covenant was the Shekinah glory of the presence of God. A pillar of cloud was there by day, a pillar of fire was there by night, and the Jews could always follow the Ark of the Covenant. But here's something very sweet. Did you know when they got on the inside of the promised land, God asked the Jews to stay back away from the Ark of the Covenant over 2,000 cubits? Now, a cubit is the distance between the bend of the elbow and the tip of the finger. About a foot and a half. On a man, it'd be up to 21 inches. I think 9 is about 20 inches. Some taller men, 21 inches. Some ladies, your cubit would be maybe 15 inches. But it averages about a foot and a half. So God said, over 3,000 feet in front, I want the Ark of the Covenant. Now he said, folks, don't go. Hey, lay back, he said, till the Ark of the Covenant gets 3/4 of a mile in front of you. Why? All right. Let's suppose tonight that we're marching over the Judean hills. Now, as you know, you folks have been there know the Judean hills are rolling kind of hills. We're marching over the Judean hills. And let's suppose that these two fellows right here, Brother Beebe and Brother Colston, have sticks or staves through rings on the corners of this piece of furniture, and they're in front of us. Now, what would happen? Well, one thing would happen. Brother Colston would stumble and fall and break the pot of manna on the inside and spit it. But as soon as we ask him to leave it alone and have Elaine get it instead of him, anyway, suppose they're carrying it. Now, if this crowd, if it were just out in front of us, right in front, and we were right behind it, only those in the front row could see it. But if it were three quarters of a mile in front of us, everybody could see it. And God wanted everybody to see his leadings. Everybody. Now they came here to hear the Judean hills. Three quarters of a mile, and you folks are in the Holy Land, three quarters of a mile on those Judean hills. Everybody can see it because you're going down a hill and look over the other side of the hill. Everybody can see it. And God said, now then, when you've got the real battle to fight and grounds you're across before and you're passing territory you've never seen before, he said, I want everybody to know my presence is there. And I want you to see, all of you to see the Ark of the Covenant. And so the Ark of the Covenant, three quarters of a mile out in front, and God was said, by the way, did you know that's the way God has done it here? Can anybody doubt that God's been in what we've done? Can anybody doubt it? Can anybody doubt the fact that God's in this thing? There is not a place in this world. There is not a church in this world that has built and grown in a location like we have right here. Show me one. There are none. Dr. John Rawlins came to Hammond to see our church, and he saw our location, and he said, it can't be done. He went back home, got his staff together, and said, they're building a bigger church there in the middle of that whole downtown section than we are. Everybody's going out. That's why we got the synagogue. The Jews went out here on Holman. That's why we're getting the United Church of Christ building. They want to go out to the suburbs. It can't be done. But it can. It's like the story that everybody's heard about the Negro man that walked through the cemetery. And it was an open grave, and he fell in it. He tried to get out, and he couldn't get out, and he jumped, and he couldn't get out, and he tried, and he couldn't get out, and he tried, and he couldn't. And finally, he just went to sleep. Gave it up. And it was late at night. Another Negro man walked through the same graveyard, and he came to this open grave, didn't see it, and he fell in it. And there he was on top of his body, and he tried to get out, and he tried to get out, and he tried, and he couldn't, and he tried, and he couldn't, and he tried, and he couldn't. And finally, he just said, I'm going to try, but I just can't do it. And so the other Negro fellow woke up and he said, fella, you can't get out of this grave. But he did. Huh? I expect he broke the high jump record of all time. They said it can't be done, but it is. They said 11 years ago, can't be done, but it was. They said he built this building. It can't be done, but it's here. They said he built that building. It can't be done, but it's here. One of the leading attorneys in this town came to my office a year ago, and he sat in my office and said, Reverend, you can't build a high school like you're building it. He said, stop. We need you in the Hammond High School system. Stay with us. You can't do it. And I said, why? Well, he said, it's going to be illegal. I said, how? I don't know, but you just can't do it, he said. But it's been done. It's been done. Can anybody doubt the fact that God has led us? Through many dangers, toils, and snares, we have already come. His grace has led us safe thus far, and grace will lead us home. I was thinking tonight as I came down the alley, there was a policeman in his car driving around the building trying to protect us from all the boogers. That's a Greek word for criminal. God is protecting us. Here we are, right down here where it can't be done. And they say, well, it can't be done. It's a strange thing. The hippies couldn't make it here. They had to go out of business across the street. Anybody's got a building, but the furniture stores can't make it. They're going out of business. Jews couldn't make it. Went out of business. I hope the Church of Christ can't make it so they can they can move too. I want theirs. But business is closed. Soul's Drugstore is closed. Seifert's Furniture Company, for sale. Olds Electric, for sale. Wolf's Cleaners, we bought it. SD Sleep Furniture, for sale. We bought it. Worth Furniture
has a building for sale.
Post Office,
it was up for sale. They're using it for something else now. Everybody going out of business. Except here we are. They say it can't be done, but it's being done. It's being done.
And so the Lord said, I want all the people to see. I want every one of my people to see.
Listen, if you can't see that God's been in what's going on so far, you just are not looking. And so the Ark of the Covenant, 3/4 of a mile out in front, and there it is. We've not passed it, but isn't that something? We've not passed this way before, but God has. We've not passed this way before, but others have. We've not passed this way before, but out yonder is the Ark of the Covenant, and it's so plain that God is leading. You don't have to know where you're going as long as you know the guide. You don't have to know what's out in front of you as long as the person leading you knows what's out in front of you. And there's something else. And that is, each generation needs to see it. Each generation needs to see it. Joshua said, look, I have seen the Red Sea part, but these people haven't. Caleb has seen the Red Sea part, but these people haven't. The last generation, the kids got to see it. Now Joshua said, it's time your generation saw the miracle working power of the hand of God. And so they crossed the Jordan River. But here's something interesting. Very interesting. Did you know that when the Jews crossed the Jordan River or the Red Sea, did you know that God didn't part them till they got wet? Huh? And now what went first? The Ark of the Covenant. So here go these Kohathites with the Ark of the Covenant. John Colston, I don't want you. You just go ahead and cross the Red Sea. And Wadabibi. And they've got the Lord's Supper table, the Ark of the Covenant. And here they go, carrying the Ark of the Covenant. And somebody says, where are you going? And Wadabibi says, we're going to cross this river. And Brother Wallace says, Brother John, you see any signs of the river drying up or the level getting lower? Brother John said, no, I don't. And he slips on a rock there beside the river. They get down and, what are you going to do? Going to cross the river. How deep is it? Oh, I don't know. 25, 30 feet. How tall are you? About 5'10", 6 feet, 6'1". What are you? Going to cross the river. Why? God said, do it. And suddenly as they get in the river with the glory of God, the waters began to part. Huh? And one Jew says, Abe? What is happening? And one Jew got his camera out, started taking pictures, and sold it for $1.98 on the other side of the Jordan River. You know, they were so happy within 3 days, they had a chain of jewelry stores all over the Promised Land. And they got on the other side of it, and all of them said, boy, aren't we glad we came forward? Wasn't that something? Man alive, aren't we glad? Somebody said, I want to go back. Sorry, you can't go back. God never parts any water with folks going backwards. Never does. So they came to the city of Jericho. Had two walls. The top of the walls, as I said a while ago, so wide that 6 horses and a chariot could go abreast on top of the wall. They even built houses between these two sets of walls. That's where Rahab the harlot lived, one of those houses. And so Joshua said, okay, Lord, what should we do? And the Lord said, I want you to go around the city one time today. And Joshua said, okay, folks, we're going to take the city. How are we going to do it? We're going to walk around it. Now, I'm sure that was not the logical thing to do. Did you know the logical thing to do is not always the thing to do? And so they walked around it once. And so the people in Jericho said, what are you folks doing? And they said, we're going to take over the city. Well, where are your weapons? Well, just walking around the city. They walked around 7 days, and 6 days once a day, and 7 times, the 7th day, 13 times. And the walls fell down. Don't you think those Jews, when those walls fell down, don't you think they were happy? Oh, my, aren't we glad we came forward? Ladies and gentlemen, though the territory is strange territory, out yonder in the future,
Well, my soul, I go out to the high school and look in and see those folks in the science lab and realize not a one of them is being taught that man came from a monkey, and not a one of them is being taught anything but the Word of God is up to date and science according to the Bible. And I walk down the halls and realize that every one of those kids is being strengthened in his faith and in his morals and principles and discipline and character. And I say, blessed be God. Brother Al, it made it sort of worth it going out there and doing all that work, didn't it? Made it sort of worth it, those hours you spent out there when you see what's going on. That's always the case. We've not passed this way before, but, brother, going forward is always the great answer for God's people. Now, how do they go forward? Joshua said, let's go. He got his message from God and told the people, and the people followed. There has to be always a great deal of confidence in God's man or in leadership. Girls with the yellow dress, yes. There always has to be a great deal of confidence in the leadership of God's man. Always has to be. You know, I've been grieved about the New York Times. I think the New York Times is guilty of treason. I think the Washington Post, the editor of Washington Post, and all the folks involved putting those secret papers in print, I think they ought to be in the penitentiary. Somebody says America has a right to know all that's going on. You've got a hole in your head that a truck could go through. You can't tell everybody the plans of battle because there are too many communists in this country and folks that will leak the plans of battle out and we'll lose the battle. You can't do it. Sometimes you've got to say, he's my leader, I have confidence in him, and I'll do what I think he thinks the best thing to do. You've got to do that sometimes, and sometimes everybody is not going to be able to understand everything that's going on. Let me give you an example. We're going to buy some property, and I say to the deacons, now nobody can know until the other church knows too. You see. Now, this must not be told. Yet, we're not trying to keep anything to anybody. We're just trying to do things according to prudence and propriety, that's all. And so they follow Joshua and across the Red Sea, Jordan River. I think that God has some wonderful things ahead for the First Baptist Church. I think somebody is going to be tempted to say, well, I just don't think we ought to go so fast. I know. But I believe we have the godliest board of deacons in the world. I believe we have 90 of God's choicest men. And I believe that as the pastor and the deacons and the people realize that we've got to make plans to save this country and do our lot to save this country, I believe under God we have some tremendous days ahead. I stop and realize the times that this church has stood, it seemed, on the brink. Don't you recall, men, when we got together and realized that this building was going to cost us $80,000 more than we thought? $80,000 more than we thought. And we thought, how in the world we get $80,000? Well, the God of that $80,000 is still alive. He's still alive. Everything that we every step we've taken forward, God has always been ready to help us because he's been there before. We've not passed this way before, but I'm glad we are. I like to travel across new territory and take new land and take new steps and win new victories and fight new battles. And I'm glad. And I'm grateful to God that he's given us the opportunities and privileges to cross the territory that we face now. God has signally honored this church. When I stopped to realize that in a matter of 2 months now, right down here, a block and a half away, we're going to have little four-year-old children sitting in pre-kindergarten classes. As I walked last night through those halls, I've had a lot of fun with the folks down there because there's many things we don't need. You know, the worship centers and the candles and all of that. And they got two pulpits, one over here and one over here and all of that. And so I've had a lot of fun with them. But I stopped to realize that down those halls, I could just see that lunchroom last night filled with our kids. And I could just see every table bowing their heads and thanking God for the food. School. And I could just see faithful, godly teachers standing up before our young people and teaching them. And I can see them being taught scriptures and yet the subjects and getting a foundation for scholarship and character And I could see a lot of our kids run down the halls, and I could see Dr. Billings with his paddle.